Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. And today, well, I have just gotten back from beautiful Vancouver, Canada. I am refreshed and I'm ready to go. And if this is your first time watching or listening to the show, know that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media groups. Now, I'll wait. No, I won't. I'm just kidding. Just know that sharing this show and others like it that focus on improved health, happiness, education, and success is one powerful way that we can make a positive difference in the world together. Now, along those lines, our topic today is, let us be greater. Doesn't get much better than that, right? Well, this is a book that carries a subtitle of A Gentle Guided Path to Healing for Adoptees. Now, although I found it to be a guided path beneficial for everyone. Now, let's talk about this because adoption is a lifeline of support and opportunity, but it also brings challenges and emotional conditions that are often silenced or left unaddressed, including PTSD, risk of suicide, and fear of abandonment. Now, our guest, Michelle Madrid, is the author of Let Us Be Greater, and she's the host of the Electricity for You podcast. She's an international adoptee herself. She's a former foster child in the UK system, and she's an adoptee empowerment life coach who has been recognized as an angel of adoption. She's an honoree by the Congressional Coalition on Adoption Institute, and she was inducted into the New Mexico Women's Hall of Fame for her work. She lives in Los Angeles, and you can visit her online at themichellemadrid.com. Michelle, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you so much, Alan, for having me. I'm honored to be here with you today.
Well, it is my pleasure. And as we were talking a little bit off the air, part of my past was working with at-risk youth. And one of the things that I found was there was an inordinate amount of adoptees that we were working with that were going to specialized programs dealing with a variety of issues, many of which were dealing with depression or other issues. I didn't really put it all together at that time. And then, I mean, in getting your book, I feel like I've been so enlightened in so many of the other things that are going on. Tell us a little bit of, first, before we go into the book, about what you went through and what you learned to a point in which you realized that maybe you need to write a book so that you can shine a light on this issue.
Thank you, Alan. You know, as you mentioned, I was born in the United Kingdom. I was placed into foster care as a baby. My parents were not married. My mother was married to another man and had three children, and I was the product of an affair with my bio father, and decisions were made that caused me to be placed into foster care. It was in foster care where, and I have the records, you know, here in my home with me, where I was labeled as a difficult to place child, as, you know, illegitimate, unwanted, just a host of what I call my logos of limitation, those limiting labels that others can place on us that somehow become a part of our own identity early on. And ultimately, I was adopted by Americans. And so I was brought to the United States to be raised. And inside of my adoptive family, whom I love, I also grew up with an alcoholic adoptive father, and that carried its own sense of trauma. I often say, you know, it's hard for adoptees. A lot of times we hear of the imperfections of our bio families, why we had to be placed in foster care, or why we were quote unquote, given up. That's not a term that I love to use, but not really like to use, but it's a term that we hear, given up, given away. But we rarely hear conversation on the fact that adoptive families aren't perfect either. And oftentimes we can be adopted into families that, of course, have their own struggles because none of us are perfect. And so I think it's very important to understand when you talk about at-risk kids and those that you worked with, many whom have, you know, are were adopted and are living their lives as adoptees, that we can deal with a lot of unexpressed grief and the lack of feeling within space to express the grief that we feel can be a very difficult and challenging road. And it can cause many points of pain that we experience that can make us feel isolated, unknown to others, even unknown to ourselves. And so as we begin to peel back the layers of this conversation as adoptees, and I think it's so important that we do, we begin, I think, to really see the human experience of this lived experience as adoptees. And that's what we must get to so that we can begin to witness the pain points and talk about them, hold them lovingly, compassionately, and begin to heal them.
You know, it's interesting to me because I think, you know, so much of our society speaks of adoption as all gain. I mean, it really is looked at as a very beautiful thing. I mean, you know, in Hollywood, they make a big deal about the fact that they've gone to such and such a country and that they've adopted these children that would never have the life that they can give them. Why does the concept of adoption lost? What do we need to do to advance the conversation forward so that people can understand that there's another side of this in regards to what the individual adoptee is going through?
I think that the narrative out there and the way that adoption has been represented has been somewhat sort of all gloss. It's this perfect, beautiful thing. And I'm not here to say that it's not and can't be beautiful. But what I am here to offer is that there is a truth that we need to speak to, that adoption is rooted in loss. And there is no shame in saying that. It is rooted in loss. If you think about it, something had to come apart before something else came together. Something had to be severed in order for something else to be sown. There is loss in adoption. And when we can't talk to the loss, we can't express the grief that we feel. We can't say out loud, I feel confused about who I am. I feel confused about why I'm here, why I feel so unwelcome in the world or disconnected from myself, why I find it so hard to trust, why I feel like parts of my biology are banished from my grasp, why I feel this urge to please others over pleasing myself, why I feel so afraid of rejection at every turn. It is the loss that we experience as adoptees early on. And we must talk about it because adoptees are suffering because we haven't been able to fully express the grief that we feel and hold in our hands the loss so that we can heal it. And I think that, you know, yeah, adoption is so often looked at as all gain, but there is grief too. And there are adoptees out there right here, right now, who are grieving. And those are the hearts that I want to find. Those are the hearts that I want to speak to.
Now, I mean, do you see as one of the issues is because of the fact that it's publicized, are adoptees trying to hide these feelings because people are telling them, wow, you should be so grateful. You've been given this great opportunity. How is that being handled by the adoptee?
It's really hard when you're told to just be grateful. And I was told that a lot growing up. My adoptive mother used to say anytime that I would, you know, bring forth some sort of thought or confusion, she would say, I saved you from a really hard place. Just be grateful and move on. Mm. And it just diminished my sense of the real raw feelings that I had. I didn't think I could explore them. And I actually thought that maybe something was wrong with me because I was having those feelings in the first place. I think that adoptees are not here. I'm certainly not here to say that I don't hold a sense of gratitude for the life that I've been given. I, along my own healing journey, have learned to sort of reconcile this experience. But just to say, just be grateful, cuts off our experience to grieve what we need to grieve so that we can heal and move forward. And so that narrative has not been helpful to adoptees. And again, I'm not saying that we don't hold gratitude, but we also hold our grieving parts, and we shouldn't have to bury those so deep. We should be able to lovingly excavate those grieving parts of ourselves, hold them out into the light, and begin to do the healing work of looking at them, exploring them, and making sense of this experience and this journey, and what that looks like and feels like for us. To claim ownership of our own journey is very, I think it's essential, not just important, but essential to do.
Now, in the book, you refer to the term first me. Can you tell us more about what that means and why it's imperative for adoptees to hold space for their first me?
Yes. My first me is the little girl I was before adoption ever happened in my life. Her name was Julia Dawn, and she existed, and she mattered. When I was adopted, after being adopted, my name was changed to Michelle. And I felt very confused growing up because I didn't know where to place that first me, the girl who was the earliest me, that identity. I knew that she was somehow still within me, but it felt like she was no longer living, although I knew that somehow she must be, right? Mm-hmm. Because I could feel her inside of me. And I think that we have to draw lines. You know, I was speaking with an adoptee the other day, and she said, we have to give up everything as adoptees. We have to give up, as an international adoptee, our first country, our first culture, our first language sometimes, our first me, our first identity. And that's what I'm referring to. Getting back to that person, doing the work of going back and excavating what that person went through, the experience that little person had, and being able to hold your first me's hand, reconnect, reunite with that part of yourself in order to move forward with a sense of wholeness, I think is really important. So often we are asked just to forget that part. And how can you forget what is innately yours? How can you forget the part of you that still exists? And I urge anyone listening to understand that adoptees aren't blank slates when we come into our new surroundings. We've had a life experience before that, and that includes our first me, and we should be able to lovingly hold those parts of ourselves as we move on, heal, and do the work of becoming whole.
You know, as you were saying that, I was thinking, what can the parents do, the parents that are adopting the adoptee, to make it easier to open up about that? Because I would envision many adoptees would be concerned that if they ask too many questions about that, that it would hurt their feelings, these people that have adopted them. Is there something that if the parents, if they know this, if they recognize this? Because I'm envisioning, you know, again, as I'm reading the book, I'm not reading the book as an adoptee. I'm reading it as probably more through the eyes of the parent. And what could I do to make them feel more comfortable to share with me the feelings that they're having so that they could do it and not feel that they're going to hurt our feelings?
And that's very real for adoptees. We don't want to hurt our adoptive families. We love them. We mm-hmm. hold a great deal of love and loyalty to our adoptive families, but we also hold these other parts of ourselves. And I think for adoptive parents and those considering adoption, first and foremost, please understand that we don't come to you as blank slates. We do have a lived experience before we enter your family. I think that's key to understand. And please lovingly contemplate that adoption is rooted in loss, that we went through a significant loss in order to arrive into your family. And that loss must be lovingly looked at and tended to. I offer a reflection exercise in my book I call Open. And I think it's really helpful for adoptees, but also for adoptive parents to OPEN, first and foremost, offer unconditional love to your child. And then, you know, the P is prepare safe space to speak with your child. What is their favorite place to be where they feel safe? Maybe it's the bed with a stuffy toy in their lap. Maybe it's under their favorite tree, but prepare safe space to have conversations. Because those conversations are important and you want to be very present with your child. That would be another part of the P, being present. And E is for just engage with your child in a way that never forces your opinion on them or a sense of you're judging them. And then N is just nurturing an atmosphere of always here and always ready to listen. I think another question you can ask your child, you can say to them, I understand that you feel loss and it's very real. And I'm here to help you. I want to hold your hand because I do understand. How can I help you? How can I best support you? And I know that will change as a child goes and grows. Perhaps when they're younger, it's just holding them. Just hold them and love them and remind them that you love them no matter what. And then as they grow and they go deeper and take deeper dives into their own lived experience, be there to hear them and witness them and be that understanding source of support for them. Because at the end of the day, as parents, it's not about us. It's about our child. And we want to help them to heal. We want to help them know how to help themselves best. And so I think those loving conversations that are built on an understanding that what you're feeling is real and you're safe to explore that is such a beautiful gift we can offer to our kids.
We have a listener question coming in. And again, I want to take this time to thank those that take the time. I know that, many people, they're working in the middle of the day, but those that take the time to send in questions, we will always do our best to get answers. This one reads, I was adopted from India at the age of 2 by a Swedish family. Please talk about the issues that we go through when we do not look anything like the family that we are adopted into and how that can be very difficult when you as a as an adult or as a family, adopt someone that from a different culture, how important it is that they get accepted into it. And this is from Julia in Seattle, Washington.
Thank you, Julia in Seattle. As an international adoptee and an adoptee who grew up inside of a home where I did not look like anyone in my family, I so appreciate this very important question. This has to do with the feeling of just feeling disconnected from a sense of identity. When I was adopted, Julia, into my family, my mother used to say, well, you're just this now. You're Southern because we adopted you and, we're from the South and this is who you are now. And I didn't resonate with necessarily the Southern culture. I didn't look like my family. And so I felt very much like I was on the outside, sort of looking in, not ever really connecting to a sense of being a part of their culture and a part of my family. And I think it's so important, first and foremost, as adoptive parents, if you adopt a child outside of your culture, to do the work of offering your child windows of connecting to their culture. Now, that could be travel at some point back to country of origin. But if that's not possible, certainly exploration about the beautiful country of India, for example. I've been there. What a phenomenal country with a rich tapestry of culture and beautiful people. but through books, through movies, through festivals that may be taking place in your community. Be with your child and understand that when you adopt from another country, that is you're sharing the culture of your child's country of origin. You're sharing that. It should be a shared experience, and to get excited about bringing those things very much alive for your child. When we're not offered that, Julia, I think we have to do that work for ourselves of becoming unapologetic and unafraid to go within and ask ourselves, what do I need to feel whole? What do I need to feel connected to my country of origin, my culture of origin, my people of origin? And to do those things that make you come alive on the inside as an adoptee, that make you light up as an adoptee. And so maybe it's learning your language of origin. Maybe it's returning to India on a pilgrimage and exploring for yourself the richness of that journey, reading books, etc. Whatever you need to do, and to understand that when you do the things that honor you, your origins, you're not doing a disservice to the family that adopted you, but you're loving yourself fully and completely and coming home to the richest version of who you're here to be. I don't think adoptees should ever have to live dissected, segregated from that which pulses within their veins. And Julia, I just urge you to do the things that make you come alive, to make you feel completely connected to your beautiful country of origin, and to remember that you're worthy of that. And I thank you so much for that question, because it's very, very important.
So Michelle, what I'm getting from this is that, you know, for us to make a positive difference, you know, on this show in people's lives, we're not in a position to be able to talk directly to young children, especially the small ones that are getting adopted. So we are, one, talking to adults who may be thinking about adopting. And so to shine a light on this for them so that they will embrace the culture, they will embrace everything for these young people that they pick up, I think is our job number one. And I think that, and then I think job number two is for those people that have been adopted and that are struggling. I think that for them to be able to get the book, for them to be able to see, first of all, that they're not alone, but also that there are things. I love the fact that you have exercises in there that they can read that will help them look deeper. One of the, you've got a mantra in the book that I really like, and in that you state that it's been impactful in your life, but it's called, you know, where focus goes, energy flows. And I see this as something that's good for all of us to follow, not just adoptees. How can this best support all of us along our journey?
Well, I have to tell you, that mantra was a pivotal moment for me. And I heard it years ago at a Tony Robbins event, and I had to start thinking, okay, where focus goes, energy flows. Where I keep my focus, the mm-hmm. thoughts that I'm having impact my life. It actually creates my reality, because there is an energy that meets me there. And so that is hugely beneficial for anyone, adopted or non-adoptee, to get. Where we place our focus, there is an energy that will find us, and it does create our reality. And our lives are impacted by our thoughts, our beliefs, the words we use with ourselves and with each other. So, for instance, I would say, understanding that, you know, some people don't like to use the word trauma when we're talking about adoption, but adoption mm-hmm. loss is what we're talking about. That is a trauma, a traumatic event in the life of an adoptee. So I want to be very specific when I talk about trauma, that I'm referring to adoption loss, the loss that we experience that is very real. And within the trauma are seated, you know, limiting beliefs. And I look at the trauma of being separated, relinquished by my first mother. And there was a limiting belief that followed me that I set my focus on, that I wasn't lovable. Something was wrong with me. I must have done something to make her go away. And I felt a sense of unworthiness in my life. I'm not lovable. I'm not worthy. I'm somehow damaged goods. And it took time to understand and to do the work of understanding that the circumstances that happened to me could not define me unless I allowed them to. So I needed to be very careful where I set my focus. And I began to explore concepts that shifted me from limiting beliefs to my limitless truth, that I am love. I am loved. I am worthy. I am wanted here in this life. I've been given this incredible gift of life. Now, what am I going to do with it? Oftentimes, it's the miracle in the mess, right? That life is messy. But when we can look at those painful points, those points of pain, oftentimes, more than not, we find our fuel and our purpose. And so I want adoptees to be really, really aware of where they set their focus, the thoughts that they're having, the beliefs that they have set as a framework for living right now. Are your beliefs serving you? Are they supporting you? Or do we need to go in and lovingly tend to those beliefs and shift a belief that's not here to serve you in the here and now? Maybe it protected you at one point. Maybe it helped you with the fear of rejection at one point, but it's holding you back from stepping into the fullest, greatest version of who you are here to be in the today. So let's do work through the exercises, through the approaches, the awakenings, affirmations in the book to shift those limiting beliefs into limitless truth. That's one example of being aware of where we place our focus, because indeed where focus goes, energy flows.
Yes.
Huge mantra to remember.
Yes. The book is Let Us Be Greater, A Gentle Guided Path to Healing for Adoptees. We're speaking with Michelle Madrid. We're going to take a break. During this break, if you know somebody that's an adoptee, shoot them a message. If you're a parent that's thinking about adoption or you know somebody that is, shoot them a message. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the thing that most of us think about if we were to envision where the problem would be, and that is abandonment. So we'll be right back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network.
Conflict International are experts at uncovering the truth. Our specialist team has decades of experience in providing a range of bespoke investigation and intelligence services to companies and individuals. Whether you need professional screening or background checks of employees, due diligence of potential clients or business partners, asset tracing services, or surveillance, Conflict International has a rapid response team on hand to get you to the heart of the matter. Our key strength is in our global capabilities. We can tap into an extensive network of trusted professional investigators based in most jurisdictions worldwide, enabling us to go almost anywhere a case takes us. Conflict International has decades of experience with a diverse range of skills among our team, developed from backgrounds in military and security intelligence services, as well as practice lawyers. Visit our website today at conflictinternational.com to find out more about our services. That's conflictinternational.com. Global reach, local knowledge.
And we're back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network. We're talking about the book, Let Us Be Greater, A Gentle Guided Path to Healing for Adoptees. And as I said in the introduction, I found it to be a guided path beneficial for everyone. So, Michelle, when we went to break, I mentioned about, it's kind of like the elephant in the room. Let's talk about abandonment.
The abandonment is at the root of the pain. It is where the fear of further rejection is seated. And it's so important, I think, to understand how abandonment impacts us as adoptees. It goes back to the loss. feeling somehow abandoned, left behind, and not always understanding why, what happened. And it leaves, I just think it leaves a gaping hole in our spirit as adoptees, this experience of being abandoned. And, you know, I'm along my own personal journey, I will tell you that even after reuniting with my first mother as a teen in the United Kingdom, I never really got the full understanding of why, like the deeper, you know, what's really down there, what's underneath. I understood the circumstances, but I never really probably got the answers I was hoping or received the answers I was hoping I would receive from her in this area of abandonment and feeling so abandoned by her. What I had to learn to do, because there was a time when I was in England and I was with my birth mother, and a neighbor came from across the street and she asked, "Who do we have here?" And my first mother got very scared. She had a look of fear on her face and she just said, "This is Michelle. She's a relative from the US." And she didn't say, "This is my daughter, Michelle." Hey. And I asked my mom, I said, "Why didn't you tell her?" And she said, "Because it's none of her business. I didn't think she needed to know." And I said, "Well, I needed to hear you say it. I needed to hear you claim me as my, as your daughter. So maybe I could feel a little less abandoned." I felt abandoned again in that moment by my own mother. And it was a miracle in the mess, because it was a messy, ugly, hurtful moment. But what I learned in that moment is the greatest. And as I grew and really thought and reflected on that moment with my mom, the greatest abandonment for me as an adoptee would be to abandon myself, mm-hmm. leave myself behind, not live according to my truth, not do the exploration that I need to do as a human being on this earth to be and become fully who I'm here to be, to leave parts of me, my own grief, my own longing, my own fears unattended to. And so I couldn't verbalize at that point as a teen what had been seeded or the spark that started to sizzle in my brain. But it really truly was that the greatest abandonment is the abandonment of self. And I will do the work to never leave myself behind. As an adoptee or as a non-adoptee, there's a lot of things that can get in the way and cause us to abandon our sense of self, our authentic selves. Mm-hmm. And doing the work of healing those places, I think, is key in coming home to ourselves. So abandonment weaves itself throughout this lived experience as an adoptee. But I think what I really want adoptees to hear, or anyone who has adopted to hear, anyone listening, that the abandonment of self is the greatest tragedy of all.
I agree. And you mentioned you were a teenager when you reconnected. How did you find her? And I have some questions after that in regards to the situation of finding either the adoptee, finding the parents, or the parents then finding the child they put up for adoption many years prior.
I, you know, wrote a letter. This is before, you know, at-home DNA testing and all of that, mm-hmm. social media. Mm-hmm. I wrote a letter to my first mother, birth mother, bio mother. I wrote to my mom. That's who she is to me, my mom. I wrote a letter to her husband. I knew that he had been in the Royal Air Force. And so I sent a letter to the Royal Air Force. And I said at the beginning of the letter, "Whoever is opening this, I need you to please read this letter through to the end, because I need an angel, and that angel just might be you." And I explained that I was looking for my mom, and that the only thing I had to go off of at the time was the RAF address of her husband, not my bio father, but of her husband. And so that letter just happened. Whoever opened it was indeed an angel. And the letter was forwarded to my mom's husband. He wrote me and said, "I have read your letter. And if this is true, then I need to see proof of who you are. via a birth certificate because my wife suffered a great deal upon letting you go, and I wouldn't want her to suffer anymore. Wow. And so I sent a copy of my birth certificate with the name Julia Dawn on it, mm-hmm. my first me, and thus began the journey to reunion with my mom.
You know, as you were saying that, I was thinking, so this husband, is this the same husband that would have been with her when she had you via someone else?
That is correct. They had three children together.
Yeah. Got to give him a lot of credit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a really tough time. And I know that, you know, because I always used to think, honestly, you know, Alan, that adoption only impacted me. And I set my focus there, that this mm-hmm. was something that happened to me. And it happened to so many others. I have siblings, bio siblings that this happened to. Yep. You know, so many were impacted by this moment and this circumstance and the choices that were made. My mom's husband once said to me, "If I only knew then what I know now, I never would have let you go." He said, "The moment I let you go, I lost my soul, and I haven't been able to find it since." And I thought that was an interesting statement. He made it to me in a pub. He and I went to dinner, and I was just a teen. And what I felt when he said that was, I lost my soul too, and I don't know how to get it back. And perhaps this is one reason I wrote the book, because it is a soulful journey back to self for adoptees. And there is a sense when relinquishment happens. And I told my mom this one time. I said, I think mom, she had given me the original letter of relinquishment. I had a copy, but she gave me the relinquishment of the actual letter, the original at one point. And I said, feeling, touching the imprint of your signature resonates with me differently, mom, than holding the copy. And I said, I think when you relinquished your rights to parent me, I may have relinquished my rights to love me. And that's what I got to figure out, how to love myself again. And it goes back to your question about abandonment. Mm-hmm. I do believe that in that moment of loss and separation and relinquishment from my mom, somehow on a cellular level, I disconnected from my ability to love myself. And I needed to reconnect to that in order to thrive in my life.
I've had a policy, and I don't even know if we discussed this. In fact, some listeners don't know. My profession is I'm an international detective. So I travel around the world. We locate people. We do a variety of different things, breaking up human trafficking rings and such. But in locating people in this situation, I've had a policy, and I'm now am possibly doubting it. So I'm going to ask you, and please just be honest and tell me if my policy has been wrong all these years. The policy that I set up was that if someone was to hire us to find their birth parent, or if it was a parent that was had given someone up for adoption and was now, you know, 20 years later, 30 years later, looking for that child, the policy I set in place was that I will find them and I will tell them everything that you want me to say. But if they don't want me to give their information to you, I won't. So my first thought, as you were saying this, is, what's your thoughts on my policy? And then let's talk about locating and how that sometimes helps or could possibly even hinder.
Oh, That's a lot to unpack there for sure. I mean, the first word you said was detective, and I'm like, oh yeah, I wrote it down. But like, as adoptees, we have to be the detectives of our lives. Mm-hmm. And I have always said I'm a tracker of truth. Yeah. And I won't stop until I have as much of my own truth that is mine to hold and possess. And certainly that looks different for each and every adoptee, for each and every mm-hmm. birth parent. It's a very individual journey, an individual walk. And so I do believe that we have to honor the individuals in each and every scenario. I never wanted to force myself on anyone. Mm-hmm. And I still don't want to force myself on anyone, but I do know that I cannot live a life of being locked away from what is true about my life mm-hmm. and the earliest parts of my life. So my exploration is truly to fill myself up with truth. You know, they say the truth will set you free. I believe that. But as an adoptee and reconnecting with my birth mom, I never did it to hurt anyone. And I went through all of the scenarios of, well, what if it causes trouble in her marriage, if she's still married to the same person? What if her, you know, children have suffered and maybe some of them might not know even that I'm in the world? You know, I went through all of these scenarios of not wanting, like, just almost shame of wanting to connect with my birth mom because I didn't want to cause anyone harm. But I also know that living as a secret and invisible in my life is no way to live. And so I think we have to reach out and do the things that help us to come home to ourselves. I use that term, but I think that's really appropriate. And also to understand that when we embark on journeys of reunion, that we really mm-hmm. need to feel very much connected to who we are. We need to have done the work, or at least some work, on loving ourselves and moving through the pain points and understanding mm-hmm. ourselves and busting through limiting beliefs, because reunion looks very different in every situation. Sometimes it's welcomed with open arms. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's met with locked doors. And as adoptees, we have to know that we are whole as we can possibly be going in, and that whatever happens inside of that moment does not define us, and certainly should not send us spiraling backward in our lives. I think that's really key to mention, because it does. There are no guarantees, Alan, in this thing called reunion. There are no guarantees.
No, I understand. So I'm looking up. We have about 5 minutes. One of the things that you talk about, but you say that the adoptee community is currently at a tipping point. How so?
We are connecting and we are mobilizing and we are using our voices as a force for good. There is no adoptee out there who is sharing their story with the goal of hurting anyone. But I think mm-hmm. what we're doing is we're realizing that we're not alone in an experience that can make you feel very much marginalized and alone. We're learning that we're not alone, and that our experiences, the points of pain, the challenges, the struggles have been shared ones. And we must talk about them in order to heal individually and collectively, and also in order to make a better way for young adoptees who are coming up behind us. And so the connecting through social media, et cetera, through platforms like this, where you're giving voice to this adoptee, it's so key, I think, to heal a conversation that has for a very long time been one-sided. And I understand there is joy, right? For adoptive parents and bringing your child, there's home, there's joy in that. But we also have to get to the fact that there's also pain involved for the child, for the adoptee. That child will grow into an adult. let's start talking about these things early on so that we don't have adults who are still hurting and still trying to find their way later in life.
And what are some resources that are out there? So let's say that somebody is out there, they are an adoptee that that just feels like something's missing, or they're dealing with depression or a host of things. What are some of the best resources for them to be able to get the help that they want?
I first want to say that what you're feeling is real and it's valid. Mm-hmm. And I want you to hold yourself lovingly and know that there are so many of us out there who understand. We get it. And we want you to know you're not alone. And the best, please hear me on this, the best source of support are adoptees. You know, I would go online. I would come to my website, themichellemadrid.com. Go online. You know, we all have mixed feelings about social media. But social media, the adoptee community, so many diverse voices, but we're connecting and we're reminding one another that indeed we're not alone and that your feelings are valid. They matter. And there is hope for healing. So I would go, you know, to Facebook, go to Instagram and just look up adoptees and see what comes to you. There are going to be a myriad of accounts out there with voices who resonate with you. And you're going to find such a light-filled space of support and of knowing and of community. And that's what we need. Honestly, that is your best source of support are the other adoptees out there in the world who invite you with open arms into this community of conversation and understanding. Please reach out today to someone in the adoptee constellation who is here to hear you, see you, and hold your hand as you walk this journey of healing.
Well, Michelle, I first of all just thank you for shining a light on this subject. You mentioned that there were some dates coming up of significance. Share with us what those are and how people can get more involved.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. October 30th. Here we are in October. October 30th is coming up. It's Adoptee Remembrance Day. And it's a day we in the adoptee community take time to pause and reflect on all the adoptees who have come before us, the adoptees here and now and the today, the adoptees who will follow us, and what we need to do to be just a source of light and hope for this incredible community of adoptees, some of the most remarkable people I've ever known. And then November is Adoption Awareness Month. Adoptees, we like to call it Adoptee Awareness Month, but National Adoption Awareness Month is coming up. It's the month of November, just a time of heightened awareness. So this conversation with you now as we enter into October toward Adoptee Remembrance Day and Adoption Awareness Month in November is very timely and it's important. And I thank you for having this conversation with me now.
Well, and again, thank you. And again, the book can be purchased, I would imagine, anywhere. And again, what is the website again that they can reach you at?
TheMichelleMadrid.com. And yes, the book can be purchased on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. And if you go to my website, TheMichelleMadrid.com, and purchase through that page, it will take you to your favorite bookseller. But there are bonuses awaiting you there. An exercise from the book, some the intro to the book, or you can start right here today of taking the deep dive inside of Let Us Be Greater. And doing the work, finding that place of understanding within the pages that will hold you and will help you along this healing journey as an adoptee.
Well, Michelle, again, thank you so much. And for everybody out there, you may not, you know, be an adoptee. You may not be thinking about adopting someone, but there was a lot of incredible information in there that I think would be beneficial for any of us. So again, Michelle, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Alan.
All right. And for everybody out there, please be with us next week as we're joined by Jerry Cantor. And he's going to discuss homeopathic remedies in ways that will surprise you. They'll surprise you. They'll enlighten you. And I believe they're going to entertain you. In fact, well, you don't have to wait till next week to check out some of our other informative shows. So visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network, or you can just subscribe to the show through Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, Rumble, Spreaker, BeatChute, and YouTube. And I think there's even more podcast platforms that carry us. If you listen to one that doesn't, please let them know you want Answers Network on that platform. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. I'm just learning about all of the stuff about analytics and things like that. I'm learning that the reviews are really important. So please do us a favor. Leave a review. Let us know either way what you think. And the next time you're on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, which X now, please remember, stop by our page, check out some of our latest shows. If you like them, please like us and spread the word. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.